Well, good day and welcome to another episode here of the Disaster Podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and we've got a lot going on today on this episode. So let's go ahead and jump right on in. And of course, whenever diving in, you need a lifeguard. And for us, that's Sam Brett.
Hey, Jamie. Well, we got our team together tonight. I'm glad to say that Jim is back with us. And of course, we got Dr. Joe traveling somewhere, I think. And Kyle's gone tonight, but we have Becky. And Becky, I swear to God, the last few days have been the weirdest weather I have ever seen in my life. We went from 101 on Labor Day to a day later, it was snowing in a low of 26. And then yesterday it melted all off and now we're warming up again. What the heck is going on?
Well, you experienced a very, very strong cold front, as I'm sure you're well aware. I think what made it really eerie, particularly in Colorado, was that the day before you had the smoke from the Cameron Peak wildfire, I believe is the one that's just west of Fort Collins there.
Right, yeah.
So that, I mean, to go from that and the heat, I mean, these types of really strong cold fronts are not unusual per se. This is pretty early for one, particularly to have accumulating snow along the Front Range, you know, areas outside of the mountains. So definitely unusual. Hopefully made some bit of difference on the fires there in Colorado. But, you know, there's still incredible fires burning in California. And then, of course, we saw over the last couple of days some fires really get triggered in Washington State and Oregon. Thousands, I think even millions of people are now evacuated all across the western U.S. It's really not a good situation. The air quality is absolutely horrific, to say nothing of the homes and properties being destroyed and the ecosystems that are now being just burned completely. And of course, you know, everything's on fire out west, and we still have the tropics happening in the Atlantic. Lots to look at on a map. The NHC's map is pretty active, but I will caveat that with there's no concern for the near, like the immediate future. We have two tropical systems out, way out in the Atlantic, Renee and Paulette. Both of those are expected to recurve and not have an impact on the mainland U.S., although Bermuda could see some impacts. The two things that we see near the Gulf of Mexico and near the kind of off the coast of Florida there will bring tropical rainstorm conditions, you know, rain showers, heavy rainfall to Florida. That's pretty standard for this time of the year. The one that we do need to keep an eye on for the last half of the month, it's already September 10th. I don't know when that happened. But here towards maybe the last week or two of September is the wave that is just emerging off the coast of Africa. So that's still quite a ways out. Bottom line is don't let your guard down. It is still hurricane season. There's still a chance for the U.S. to be impacted. So keep an eye on the tropics.
Yeah, I'm sure Oregon wishes they would get some of that rain.
I know.
I was looking at it today. They have 35 active fires and 900,000 acres or something. It's pretty insane in Washington as well. And they've had 8 deaths, I guess, between the 3 states. So I feel for them. I'm just hoping. I understand because you and I were talking about. I wonder if the snow and cold here will make a difference. I guess it did on the periphery. Not, of course, on the main fire, but they made a major attack on it. Is that Jim? Oh, somebody said something. Okay.
No, okay. Good. Keep going.
Little blip there. All right. Well, one thing I want to do tonight is something we haven't done in some time, and since Jim is back with us, it's a good opportunity to do that. And I want you guys to kind of reintroduce yourself because we've had so many new members, especially since Jim's been tied up. So, Jim, why don't we start with you? Tell them a little about yourself.
Oh, gosh. I've got 5 kids. I'm married. I've got 3 goldfish, 5 dogs, and a cat. It's great to be back. So my career started in fire EMS 30-something years ago, 30-plus years ago. I met this weird guy that was in medical school. Are you there?
He is.
Thanks. Okay. All right.
I'm here.
Just didn't know. Yeah, there you go. So anyway.
I'm listening to you. Make sure you get it right.
I'll get it right, brother. I'll get it right. So anyway, so our paths crossed back in the mid and late 80s, and then kind of got away from each other and met back in Memphis, and we've been going strong in pre-hospital care ever since. So I've since retired from the Memphis Fire Department as a managing officer of the Office of Emergency Management. And kind of moved around a little bit. Now I've landed at the county health department, which I think I'm really going to like because it has a lot of elements that are near or dear to my heart, and that's emergency preparedness. And so that's kind of where I'm at right now. And then Dr. Holly and I started this crazy idea back in 2009 called Paragon, and we're still going strong.
Yes, you are. So, Joe, that's a segue to you, I think.
So I am an emergency physician by training and have transitioned in my career to be a full-time EMS physician. I have, along with Jim, done a lot of disaster medicine over the last career. Or two, and am still actively doing some of that. And as Jim mentioned, we took our passion for education and the need we felt to teach the fairly unique set of skills that we developed over a lot of time in the field to create Paragon and do initially sort of disaster training, although we've expanded now to include special operations stuff, a lot of military work, a lot of research stuff, particularly in cardiac arrest, and continue to do our core stuff with procedural and disaster medicine stuff. The podcast sort of grew out of our desire to continue our educational sides and share what we could with folks, and that's brought us to right here.
Yes, it has. Jamie.
Well, I'm Jamie Davis. I call myself the pod medic. I'm a retired paramedic, former EMS chief in my local volunteer system, eventually moved on to become a registered nurse and changed that into a career as a healthcare journalist. And that's how I kind of met up with Joe and Jim and of course, Sam, kind of covering emergency preparedness and healthcare and emergency medicine and EMS. And that's how this podcast got started, was a discussion, I think, in Vegas at EMS World Expo one year a long time ago now, to talk about how we could get the word out about what Paragon was doing and to build the disaster podcast, what became the disaster podcast. So I'm excited to be here and continue to get the word out to responders, to citizens, to everybody about preparedness and what's going on out there in communities during disaster situations.
Indeed, and we will talk a bit more about that. So Becky's our newest member, although she's been with us for some time now, which we are very grateful for. So tell us about everything you do, Becky, and that's quite a lot.
Yeah, I think it's been close to 2 years now, which is pretty crazy. So I'm a meteorologist by training. My bachelor's degree is in meteorology. I've been with AccuWeather for 8.5, almost 9 years now. Started out as a meteorologist and then eventually decided that I wanted to get more into the human side of things. And so I went back for my master's in emergency management. And I'm now still with AccuWeather, but very much focused on the emergency preparedness aspect of things and helping our business-to-business clients really utilize the meteorology and the service that we can provide with pretty site-specific, threshold-specific warnings and making sure that they're, you know, acting on those appropriately, that they're integrated into their emergency action plan. Yeah, it's very much an integration of weather and the human side of how weather impacts people and disasters. So it's been great to come on here and learn about the, I guess, sort of response side, as I've not really done the boots on the ground response side yet being the key word there. But just really learned from all of you and everything that you do, you know, really right in the moment as disasters are happening.
Well, you guys have made kind of a weather junkie out of me too. We've learned as much from you as you have from us. So Kyle isn't here, but basically this guy has his finger in 47 different pies. He's a 911 dispatcher, a ski patroller, a tower climber, and a meteorologist, and he does a lot of training across the country. So that's the short story. For me, I've been in EMS my entire career in any number of different ways, from EMT to field paramedic to field supervisor to ER tech, educator, and so forth. And I'm also been a member of a DMAT team, Disaster Medical Assistance Team, for many years. And on the side, I'm a writer like Jamie. So in any case, we want to go to Jim because, you know, as much as Dr. Joe has kept us updated on COVID with all the updates he was getting from his folks around the world, the one thing he didn't have a lot of information on was vaccines and how they're made and what they're doing and how they're going to be distributed. And that happens to be Jim's level of expertise because that's what he's doing now. So, Jim, we're going to let you run with it.
Yeah, so basically I know Dr. Holly's briefed you guys on all the testing and, you know, the numbers and the data and what we've been seeing and how this thing's growing. I think the next step is, you know, I'm glad to see most people are wearing masks and are respecting the social distancing. I think that's helping a lot. But the next step is the vaccine. There's several companies that are bidding for that contract. I know one had to put themselves on pause the other day because of an adverse event that happened. But hopefully they'll get back. We'll kind of look at that and see what happens. But there's still a lot of unknowns. And it's just like when we started, you know, learning about this virus, it changes. And so will, I think, just my opinion, so will how this vaccine, whichever one it is, whichever one we get to, will be delivered to the public. There was a Senate hearing yesterday. A lot of great questions. It was probably one of the best Senate hearings that I've ever listened to. There were a lot of great questions and a lot of great answers by the Surgeon General and by the Director of the NIH. The word we're getting now is we'll probably realize some sort of vaccine or a vaccine probably in November, December. So the big question, of course, yesterday on the Hill was, you know, will it be on Election Day? You know, so that was the big thing. That's the big joke right now, right? Is this politics or is it process? And it was made very clear yesterday in that Senate hearing by both the Surgeon General and NIH, and of course by the companies that are developing the vaccine, that this will not move. The vaccine will not move forward if it doesn't show efficacy and safety. So what was interesting is there's about 30,000 volunteers that are taking this vaccine in the trials, and usually for this type of trial it's like 3,000 people. So they're really putting a lot of effort into it. And I know there's a lot of doubt on social media and you know, other platforms. You know, everyone has an opinion, but there's a lot of work a lot of hard work going in by a lot of smart people in science, not in politics, but in science. And I really believe, and I think we have to believe this, that's where this is going. It's going to be science-driven, no matter what anybody thinks right now. I know we're getting a lot of, you know, a lot of banter on, you know, whatever news station you watch about this is a political thing. And I truly believe that's not the case.
Well, yeah. And a lot of people would like to think that or not think that. But I think the scientists have the upper hand on this, and politics be damned, in my opinion. Joe, you have some thoughts on what he said so far?
I do think we're certainly progressing on vaccine development. I think there are an awful lot of challenges to creating an effective vaccine for coronavirus, just because it is such a variable virus. And so kudos to all the companies that have invested significantly in their efforts to bring this to us. I'm pleased to see that the trials are moving forward quickly. I think we'll start seeing some data pretty soon. And maybe by the end of the year, we'll have some early vaccine out in the field and can begin some immunization processes of our high-risk folks.
Yeah, and I think that's true. I think what's important to know is this will be a tiered delivery of the vaccine. Of course, first responders, vulnerable populations like your nursing home patients, critical infrastructure. And so there won't be a lot of vaccine until probably mid-year next year for the general public. So that's something that's not getting out there. Another thing that's not getting out there is there's going to be two doses, two vaccines. They'll be 21 days apart. So there are some challenges with, you know, you get the vaccine and you got to go back, you know, to get the second one to make sure it's, you know, most effective. And then the storage is going to be crazy because it has to be, you know, kept at minus, I think, 70. One of the companies, minus 70. And so it's going to be difficult to do that, but it's something we've got to, you know, learn to live with and, you know, get our logistics right. And so there's a, like Dr. Holly said, there's a lot of challenges that are coming our way.
Well, Jim, as you know, what we try to do on the show is make sure people get accurate information. And I don't think it could be more accurate than somebody that's in the inside like you. So, Don't pay attention to social media. Listen to Jim. Jamie,
you got
what's that? Go ahead.
Yeah, Jim, actually, you know, one thing I'd like to point out and get your take on this, but dissemination of medication in emergency situations, whether it's a vaccine or some other medication needed for a given emergency, there is a system that is in place that health departments and emergency response systems in this country have set up already. Can we talk a little bit about that now?
Sure. One thing is a strategic national stockpile, and that's everything from, you know, whatever the disease of the day is. If it's, you know, anthrax, it's antibiotics. If it's something like this, it's medication. You know, the vaccine plus ancillary supplies. So they're really push packs, if you can look at it that way. So whatever community needs those, which will be all of them, it'll be pushed out from 12 different locations to the local health departments in each state. There's a program called City Readiness Initiative, and that's what it's a grant funded program. And that's all they do is they prepare for these types of events, which fortunately don't happen every day. But this thing called COVID came along, and you know, so they'll be involved in that. And then, you know, flu, they're involved in that. And we have what's called open and closed points of distribution. So open would, of course, be like for the general public, drive through, just like you're having testing right now. So You trade the nasal swab for a needle, right? It's that simple. And just have the same people there to deliver the vaccine. We're going to try to make this as contactless as possible, so it won't be a like a walk-in clinic or things like that. It'll probably be all drive-through driven. And then you have closed pods. People can sign up for closed pods, and that's generally your big corporations like Nike, FedEx, International Paper, and different municipalities. They can choose to have a closed pod, an agreement with the health department that we assist them in those things. And it's just for those employees and their families to come in. And so there's no line, no waiting, if you will. They're set up for, like, let's just say where I live, the city of Bartlett, they have a closed pod agreement. And, you know, when it comes available, we set up a closed pod. They pick a day, we come out, we get it done.
Well, the burning question that I've seen bounced around, will first responders be high up in that priority list?
They're first. They're first. They're tier one. They're tier one people. Yeah. They're tier one.
Well, as they should
So that would be first responders. It would also be healthcare workers, health department, because they're all considered at you know, critical infrastructure. And then you got to think about people like your power company, right? And things like that. So it's there's a lot of I know we're important, but we're just as important as the next person as far as making things run at a normal pace. But of course, it's listed first as a tier one for fire, police, and EMS.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's nice that their families are being included as well, because, you know, if one of them gets sick, then there we go again. So,
kudos. So the reasoning for that is, if your family's sick and you're a police officer, you're gonna have to take off work to go take care of your family. So you might as well vaccinate the entire family.
Makes sense to me. What about meteorologists? What tier are they on?
I don't know. I'll look that one up tomorrow. Actually, I'll get back with you on that. But
because we need them,
But for the most part, it's fairly easy for us to do our jobs and maintain distance and, be in a safe place. We've really adapted to being in our own homes. It's not quite as collaborative in the office as we used to be. That being said, if a meteorologist is embedded in an EOC, they hopefully will be getting a vaccine if possible.
Yeah.
So depending on,
I think everybody's going to be taken care of. And another thing that came out of the hearings yesterday was asked over and over and over again, will this be free? And the answer is yes. Your Walgreens or your CVS or your shot nurse? Will those costs be reimbursed to those people? And the answer is yes. So even if they don't have insurance or Medicare, Medicaid, whatever it is, all Americans will be covered at no charge, is what the word is today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I noticed that a lot of those stores like Walgreens are giving free flu shots right now, which kind of begs the question, could there be possible interactions between the COVID vaccine and the flu vaccine, which everybody is trying to get right now?
I'm going to defer to Dr. Joe. I think it's really bad, and we've heard this. It's if you get both at the same time, it's not good for you. But I don't know if there's anything about the vaccines mixing. I haven't heard anything on that.
Joe?
So to my knowledge, I'm not aware of any, crossover problems. I mean, one's an influenza virus, the other's a coronavirus. They're quite different. There is definitely, as mentioned earlier, great value in ensuring that you get a flu vaccine this year. And preferably sooner than later. Although the influenza this year, usually this time of year, we're seeing a lot of influenza in South and Central America. That's just sort of the seasonal variation. And it's been a relatively quiet flu season in South America this year.
we generally in the U.S. Sort of follow whatever, you know, is happening in those areas. And so the hope is that it's not a terrible flu season this year, but nevertheless, it's going to be very complicated in trying to differentiate, ascertain, and treat someone who might have either disease or potentially both. And as Jim said earlier, having both of those together is definitely no bueno.
Well, it makes good sense. Get your flu shot now, and then when the vaccine for COVID comes around, you'll be good. But, you know, I kind of wonder how complicated it's going to get when people get a common cold or the flu and think they have COVID. That might be interesting. Jim, what do you think?
Definitely. I mean, that's, you know, we're coming around flu season, and so, you know, it's going to be a toss-up. Which is it? I know my daughter ended up having tested negative for COVID. They never tested her for flu, but she had the flu-like symptoms in a non-flu time of season of the year. So, I mean, she ran fever and the whole thing. So there's something to be said about, you know, the positivity and negativity rates. But yeah, I think we're going to see some. We definitely need to be testing for both now to see which one you'll be treating, because there's some similarities to treating. What I would not recommend is getting multiple vaccines in one day. I'm just giving that advice out right now.
You know that well, don't you?
Yeah. So anyway, that's another story for another day.
That's another story. So I guess one good thing out of this is if people are wearing masks for COVID, then they're less likely to get the flu. What do you think, Jamie?
Well, I think that's a good assumption, at least based upon what we know. I'll defer to Joe on some of this because he probably can say more clinically about that. But I, you know, given the fact that airborne droplets are airborne droplets, if you can contain one and not spread it to other people, then you should be able to probably do the same with your influenza virus. Is that correct, Joe?
Yeah, I think you're on the right track. Certainly, the spread of influenza is quite similar to the spread of coronavirus, and so the same measures, social distancing, and you know, protecting yourself with masking, et cetera, should benefit influenza as well.
Good deal. Well, that's great information, Jim. I'm glad that we're able to get something out there that someone
knows. Well, you know, it's limited just as when we started having information flow in about the virus itself. It changes every day. So, you know, I know there's a lot of hype about we're going to have this by the end of the year. Maybe. Maybe. And who are we? So that's the thing. We, you know, the general public might not see this till mid next year.
Yeah. Well, it's good for them to know that because it's a big question.
I don't know if they know that yet. That's the big rub, right?
They need to listen to this podcast, obviously.
I guess so. But you know, the information is, as the new word goes, is fluid and ever changing.
Yep, exactly. So next week it might be different. Well, we're going to wind this up with kind of a way back machine story here that we alluded to earlier. So it's September 11th, 2013, and all of us are at EMS World in North Vegas. And we had just really gotten to know Jim and Joe a little bit, and Jamie had been interacting with them quite a bit. And we decided to sit down and discuss the concept of the disaster podcast. And there were some other folks there, Ted Setla, and some I don't remember exactly who all was there. But in any case, we were having dinner and having this great discussion. And I remember when we pulled in, seemed to be a lot of traffic and roads that were closed, and we were kind of wondering about that. So as we're sitting eating dinner, we hear bagpipes, and that can only mean one thing. So we went, as a group, went rushing outside, and sure enough, North Vegas Fire was having a parade to commemorate 9/11. And obviously, we thought that was pretty cool. So we went back in, wrapped our conversation, and then, you know, some of us wanted to go back, and some of us were kind of hyped up by all of that. So Jim and Joe and I went next door to the Irish pub where all the firemen were there having a good old time. It reminded me of an Irish pub, quite frankly. And, of course, Jim couldn't wait to interact with those guys. So Joe and I sat down, and we're just kind of chatting. And, you know, when it comes to September 11th, I just kind of go underground and don't interact with a lot of people, because it's one of those, if you weren't there, you don't really understand it. And in some cases, you don't feel like talking about it. Well, that's when I found out that Joe had been at the Pentagon and myself at Ground Zero. And I think that was kind of a bonding moment between us. And it's been that way ever since. So, Joe, can you talk just a little bit about what you did at the Pentagon? Because I don't know if a lot of people remember that about you.
Well, sure. Jim was there as well. We both spent a couple of weeks there after 9/11. And we were part of several federal teams that were responsible for search and rescue, as well as shoring up the building, trying to make the building as safe as we could for, you know, the workers that would follow us in there, et cetera. So that's most of what we did. I think obviously that was a very unique experience, with lots of forensics being involved in that for evidence collection and that sort of thing. And we certainly spent a number of long nights there, combing through the wreckage of that building and looking for all the stuff you'd expect us to be looking for.
Yeah.
So, Jim, what do you remember about it that really sticks in your head?
That really sticks in my head. There's a lot of things. One is getting very discouraged. That, of course, you know, by the time we got there, it was pretty evident that it was going to be a recovery mission. I think everybody who had been saved was saved already, but we still had a job to do. Of course, we hoped to find people. So I guess about day three or four, so you asked what really stuck out in my head. I kind of got down, and you get in this vacuum when you're on those deployments. And so we were, Joe and I were, on our team, we were part of, luckily, we were part of, if there's any blessing to that, we were part of the day crew, which we started at 7 and we went home at 7. And so about day three or four, we were walking out, my head was down, and I'm thinking, why are we working so hard? And then I looked to the north, and if you can look at, there's an Air Force memorial at the back part of Arlington Cemetery. So Arlington Cemetery backs up to the highway there between the Pentagon. And so up on the hill, there were lights, there were candles on this hill. And I asked one of the chaplains, I said, who are those people? And he said, son, those are the family members that you're looking for right now.
Oh, I just got chills.
Yeah.
Wow.
So there's many stories we could spend hours on. That's one thing that really sticks out in my mind. And then the other thing was this, is that right now we seem so divided. And after 9/11, we seem so close.
Yeah. You know, you're right. I haven't made that distinction, but you're absolutely right. I wish we could get that level of patriotism back that we had then. It was really a different world. And now it's...
So those are the two things that I can talk about right now. And I'm like you, you know. Tomorrow will be a pretty kind of a chilled day, and it's just thinking about the people that I was blessed to serve with and to serve. And so.
Yeah, when they say never forget, we don't have a choice. It's burned in our
memories.
Well,
I turn that around. I always say, always remember.
Yeah, I like that better.
Always remember. Always remember.
So, Jamie, I don't know what you were doing that day. I don't think we've ever talked about it.
Well, you know, I was, I remember distinctly watching the planes, the second plane hit the towers, and I had gone into the gym like I did every day, with dropped my kids off at the Y in the little play area for the two kids, and well, three kids I had at the time. I guess Sarahlyn was still born at that point. And I remember walking a treadmill, watching the news feed. And soon as I realized this was an attack and not an accident, I grabbed the kids and went back home and called into the firehouse and said, what's going on? And they said, well, come in, but don't go anywhere. You know, just stay at the station. Because they didn't want self-deploying or anything like that. And I'm in Maryland, kind of, you know, an hour and a half or so from D.C. and about 3 hours from New York. And it wasn't inconceivable that there could be something, you know, to even to cover mutual aid or something in either direction based upon what could happen. We didn't know what else
exactly
was going on. And so I got family member to watch the kids, and spent the day at the firehouse watching with everybody else and just waiting to see if we needed to be called. There were, you know, the planes were getting grounded, so we had a call that there was a, you know, we had a plane flying around the county. It was a small craft. It just was some guy that flew an ultralight out of his backyard.
Oh, my God.
He either hadn't gotten the news that he was supposed to be down or was being willful, but, you know, it caused a bit of a ruckus in the area until they were, you know, able to identify that this was just a guy that, you know, was a local known person. So it was an odd situation that day, and well after that, because, having been a firefighter and paramedic and part of the fire service, the way people looked at what we did changed
definitely
a lot that day because of the sacrifice. It was just a hallowed time. That's all I can say about it. It's something I will always remember, where I was, what I was doing, and what I did in the days afterward to be better at what I could do.
That's a good way of looking at it. What do you remember?
Again, always remember. Can I say one more thing real quick?
Yeah, of course.
So, Jamie, were you with us at North Little Rock? North Little Rock. North Vegas?
Was I where?
North Vegas. On September 11th.
Yes. Yeah, I was there
yeah.
when we were meeting that day and
yeah.
saw the memorial
there,
that the North Vegas team
right.
did. And
that's cool. So I can tell you, back during 9/11, we didn't have social media. We didn't have Facebook. We had none of that. So I can tell you where I first met Jamie. It was 2006 in Dallas.
Oh.
And I got invited by, I think it was Ted Settler,
probably,
to this yep. social media thing. I was like, what the heck is that? These people are crazy.
Yeah, he was on top of that.
So, Jamie, you're a pioneer. Thank you.
Yeah, I met.
Yeah, we tried to get something started.
Yeah.
You know, it was important to be out there and be active and, you know, start the podcast
yep.
and have these conversations. So, and you know, that's been a long time. I mean, I there weren't that many EMS podcasts when I started back in 2005.
Yep.
So
yep.
it was, I think there were only three or four of us.
That's how I met Jamie at one of those EMS World things. And Ted also introduced me to him, and we've kind of been working together ever since. So Becky, what do you remember about that day? What were you doing?
Well, I won't tell you my age at that time.
Don't
but
get me started on that.
You know, I was in school in Colorado, so I have a much different perspective on it. And I've talked with my husband, who lived in New Jersey, about 45 minutes west of New York City, and we have such different experiences and perspectives of that day. I found out what had happened when I got to school. So Colorado was 2 hours behind, obviously. So I had just gotten to school, and I heard someone next to me say something, and I was like, what? And I walked into my science class, and they had the TVs showing everything. I watched it all happen, you know, and that was just fine. You know, it was obviously, like, I don't think any of us processed, like, the devastation that was occurring in front of us. But then I talked to my husband, and the church that he grew up in had something like 30 or 40 people who passed away, who perished in the towers. And so he's talked about how, you know, they thought about, like, teachers in the school that he was at, you know, they thought about showing it, and like maybe some or started to show it and then maybe did. I forget what the exact thing was, but like they eventually realized that these kids that they were potentially watching this had parents in those towers. And if they were to show it, they would have seen, you know, essentially their parents potentially passing away, perishing in the collapse of the towers. And he's talked about, like, his mom's reaction. His dad worked in Newark at the time and watched the towers fall from across the river. And it's just really interesting to me to hear the different perspectives, you know, as I've gotten older, from people who are across the country, and how differently we view it, but how there's still that same sense of sort of connection and camaraderie. And like, we, as has been said already, we all came together as a country after that in the way that I have never seen since then. And it's unfortunate that it took something like that to bring us together. And it's unfortunate that I'm not sure that will happen again. You know, you'd think now, in the middle of everything happening, would be a great time, but that's unfortunately not what we're seeing. I don't know. There's a lot to reflect on 19 years later.
Yeah, yes. You know, it's other things that are dividing us, unfortunately, and I would hate to think it would take another disaster to bring us back together. But that was unique in terms of the type of disaster we were dealing with. And I remember hearing about Brick, New Jersey, because that was a very big area for people to commute into New York, and they took a huge hit. So I don't know if that's close to where your husband was, but man. Anyway, my experience was sort of like Jamie's. I was going on my 24-hour shift as an EMS supervisor, as a paramedic supervisor, and I never listened to the news going in. I always put an audio book in there. I wanted my chill time, you know? So I get there, and the outgoing supervisor is walking toward me with a look I've never quite seen on his face, and the only thing he says is, come with me. Okay. So we walk into the classroom, and everybody that wasn't on a call at the moment was looking at the TV, and that's when one of the towers went down. And I went, Dave, tell me that's a movie. He goes, no. He said, this could be a very interesting day. Well, especially when I was coming on shift, so now my wheels start turning. Oh, geez, what the heck do I do? How is the field responding to this? I mean, I had all of those things on my plate. But somewhere in the back of my mind, I knew I would end up there, having been a member of the DMAT for so long. Well, that was weird in and of itself, because one other person from our operation was also on my team. But the list kept changing. You're on it, you're off it, you're on it, you're off it, because of the types of people they needed. Well, he and I both ended up being deployed as CISM, critical incident stress management, for the 16-person team going to New York. Well, I found out one thing about that. It's really hard to do CISM on other people when you're dead in the middle of it yourself. So I did the best I could to take everybody's temperature every day and let them talk. And because we were split up. We were split up on either side of the pile. So we didn't see half the people all day. So we'd all get together. Our shift was goofy. We got back at like 1 in the morning, and we'd sit down and eat French fries and drink margaritas or something and kind of, you know, just commiserate with each other. My strangest experience was when I was working, you know, in one of the tents And this pastor came in and he said, "Do you have any eye wash?" And we went, "Well, yeah." So we gave him some, and a little while later he came back. He says, "Do you have any more?" And finally our commander, Dave, goes, "Well, what is all this about?" He goes, "This particular night they had shut down all the heavy equipment because they were having the first public showing the next day. So the firefighters were trying to dig into this part that they wanted to get to but couldn't because of the heavy equipment, and they were literally doing a caving operation, and of course the dirt from their makeshift roof was falling on them." So Dave looks at me and another guy, Andy, who was a nurse paramedic, and said, "You two, gear up." And the thing about it is everybody acknowledged what the pile was. It was sacred ground, but we didn't go in there. And when Dave turned around to us and said, "You're going in there," we kind of looked at each other like, "Oh my God." So we jumped in the little gator, took some ALS gear, and Dave drove us to the top where you look down into this huge hole. And so we kind of stood there for a minute, and the captain down there waves us in, and we kind of looked at each other. We were geared up with everything, double filter respirators. There wasn't an inch of our bodies that weren't covered. So we walked down in there and just kind of stood there, and it was the weirdest feeling in the planet, because I'm looking at emails, I'm looking at rebar sticking up going, I am standing in the most infamous place on the planet at this moment. And something that Andy and I didn't talk about for years is we kind of both felt we were very much not alone down there. That's a story for another time, too. But, you know, they didn't get what they wanted. The firefighters just started walking in single file back up the trail to that where the top of that lip was. And Andy and I were the last ones out. But we got this shot in our heads of them standing there. And they had these lights that looked like the lights in a football field kind of backlighting them, and all the smoke that was still rising from the ground. And it was the most amazing picture in our minds, but we didn't have cell phones back then, nor would it have been appropriate to do that. So, you know, when we got back into the tent, we all had our different ways of diffusing each other and ourselves. And we had one PA who was a sketch artist. And both Andy and I, without even talking about it, said, "You have to draw this. We have to remember this." And she did. And I still have those pictures somewhere. So, you know, the hard thing was, like you guys were saying about the bodies, there were body recoveries every day, and there was this whole process they went through every time. But, you know, I tried to keep thinking, another family will have closure. You know, another family will be able to bury their loved ones. So I tried to keep that thought in my mind. So there you go. It's a weird way to end the show. Anybody have any other thoughts? Joe? Or are you all stunned?
I think you summed it up beautifully. You know, it's hard to believe it's been 19 years and it feels like yesterday. So I think you summed it up very nicely, Sam.
Thanks, Jim. Final thoughts?
I think this was a good episode. I think it was cathartic for me to talk about a few things.
I think so.
I think there's many more stories that the public doesn't know about. That, you know, maybe next year we put those together, because these are things that don't go away in our minds. And some of them are good stories.
They are.
So, from the Red Cross to the Salvation Army, those people were saints to us. They were the first responders for the first responders. And I can't say, let's save that for next year.
Exactly. They were in there with us, too. And I think that's a good idea, Jim. On the 20th anniversary, mm-hmm. we can expand on this much more. So, Jamie, take us out.
Yeah, and I'll just, you know, before we do our final close here, I just, you know, I'd just like to make a point that those of us who remember how unified we were as a country in those moments and days and weeks afterwards, try to think about that in the current months ahead of us and give each other a little grace and space to be individuals without being divisive with each other. Maybe that can help us reunify a little bit. I can hope at least. You know, Joe, you know, a lot has come about since those days. A lot of growth and change has happened. A lot of good things for first responders, for communications, for incident command, for all sorts of things came out of 9/11. And ultimately, the genesis of what I do in this podcast and what you and Jim got together to do with Paragon, you know, a lot of things came out of that time. And I just want to thank you and Paragon Medical Education Group for supporting this podcast, for supporting responders with your amazing training, and the things that you do to keep people at peak preparedness. And so we just want to thank you and Jim for that.
Well, thanks very much, Jamie. We certainly appreciate it. We would also want to remember all those that we've lost since then due to exposures and illness related to the activities surrounding 9/11.
Amen.
In fact, I'm going to leave it at that altogether. You can find everything about us at disasterpodcast.com, at our Disaster Podcast Facebook group, where you can reach all of us. I will leave it at that and turn it back over to you, Sam. We're all here for each other. We're all here for you as listeners, and we'll all be here for a little while to come at least. So back to you, Sam.
Thank you, Jamie. And I think that was cathartic, Jim, a little bit. It's hard to talk about. But, you know, we were all in it together. So, and Jamie certainly on his side as a firefighter. So there you go. I'll be thinking about you guys tomorrow. And I guess all we can say about this is September 11th is not any other day.